What's going on, guys? Welcome to Basie Podcast episode 114. Had a great chat with awesome dude Matt Marnie. Matt is a mutual friend, another friend from the show. Rose hooked us up, introduced us to each other, or kind of set this up. It's great to have Matt down to discuss meditation. Matt's a Pilates instructor and does a lot of trainer and coach education. He's in the education world. But the reason I wanted to get Matt down was to talk about meditation. Selfishly, more than anything, it was something that I've been trying to get stuck into a lot more recently, and kind of just had no idea what I was doing, wasn't sure if I was doing it right. I've played with it on and off for years. In the last couple of months, I've been really trying to stick to it, listen to a load of stuff around it. And then I listened to a podcast Matt did, which I'll leave in the show notes. You should go listen to that one too. Go through a lot of the same stuff that we cover in this episode, but he just put it into a perspective that I really appreciated and made a lot of sense to me. Sometimes you listen to stuff and you're like, yeah, I'm still not sure what it is I'm supposed to be doing here. We go through what is meditation. I think there's a lot of kind of ideas around there about what meditation actually is. The way Matt explains it, or the type of meditation he explains, is way simpler, and he put it in a way that made me feel way less intimidated to get stuck into it. I know a lot of people, when Matt says this, is they want to do meditation, but they don't know where to start. They don't know what it is. And even when you do start, you're not sure if you're doing it right. So I won't spoil it, but Matt explains it in a way that makes a lot of sense and kind of breaks it down. And made it really interesting for me to be like, yeah, okay, that's what it is. He goes through a bunch of how and different types of meditation, everything from breathing to concentration and mindfulness and different ways you can meditate, even in the shower. And then some of the benefits, which are the obvious ones, as well as some that you might not have thought of, and how it can impact your day-to-day life. But just a thoroughly enjoyable episode. Matt is definitely what I would consider an expert in this field, so it was a really good conversation for me to have, wanting to know more, but also extracting information for you guys, the listeners, to keep hold of. Matt did offer to do some workshops for us at the gym, so if anyone is interested, please get in touch with me. If anyone wants to get in touch with Matt, you can get in touch with him through Matt Money Fitness. You can reach out to him, but I'll put all the links to get in touch with Matt in the show notes. Enjoy episode 114 with Matt Marnie. Have an amazing day, team. How are we doing, team? Welcome back to Basie Podcast, episode 114. Got an exciting one for you today. I'm with Matt Marnie. Matt, how are you doing?
I'm good, mate. It's good to be here.
Thanks for coming down.
Excellent.
This is going to be interesting to see how this goes, because we've just done one already. This is podcast two of the day, and I'm already stumbling my words. So we'll
and I'm also, just to the listeners know, I'm drinking one of your nuclear coffees.
So hopefully that'll kick in soon and we'll be
fine. Yeah, I've already got palpitations and I've just literally had one sip. So let's see where this bad boy goes.
So we won't judge him for it, but Matt's an instant coffee drinker and I've just made him an AeroPress, so he's going to be flying in a second.
Love a bit of Nescafe. Right.
So the reason I've got Matt on, Matt was a connection through a mutual friend who was last episode's guest, Rose. And I know some of you have been to see Rose and got some good feedback about Rose's episodes. That's cool to know that people are taking that on board. And I, through Rose, got put onto Matt and looked through some of his podcasts, and there was one about meditation. So I did some dive into Matt. It turns out Matt teaches meditation, which is, for me, I've been on this journey recently. I've got a funny story about meditation, actually. I've been back on a journey recently. I've done it every day now for what I consider meditation. I'm sure you can clarify this for me, whether it is or isn't. Is for the last couple of months, I've done it every morning. I'm trying to get into the habit.
Yeah.
Whereas, I'll tell you the story now, it's quite funny, is years ago, so it was 2016, I tried to dive into this and find out more about it and learn and play with it. And I got really good at it. And what I mean is I could have literally an out-of-body experience. So I would try and visualize it. At the time, I was training quite hard. I wanted to add a lift. I wanted to achieve. I wanted to chuck this weight over my head. And so I listen to something, it's like visualization. So my meditating I was doing, I'd sit on the gym floor, cross leg, close my eyes and just breathe until I got to the point where I could see myself doing this exercise. And what I could see is me stood there watching me weightlift whilst I can also see me meditating. And I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. I can actually see, I visualized, did the whole thing, whatever, whatever. And I used to live in Abu Dhabi. I used to drive to Dubai. So when there's really bad fog, I used to have like mild panic attacks while I was driving. So M had to drive, and one day I had to actually pull over and ask her to drive. And then one day I had to drive from Abu Dhabi to Dubai, and M wasn't there, she was on holiday, so I had to drive on my own. I was like, well, fuck, I've got to drive, you just got to man up and do it. And I was driving, I was like, no, this is fine. And then I started having a panic attack, and I was like, fuck. So I was like, just breathe, just calm down. So I started breathing much like I would do when I'm meditating. Next thing you know, I'm sat in the passenger seat watching myself drive. And I was like, what the fuck is
this? I thought you were going to say I got out of the car and tossed the car above my head. I thought, my God, that was an amazing manifestation. You were so strong. You pulled over and just tossed your car above you.
No, not
wow.
quite.
Well, that's what you're talking about there. Just listeners think you're not, you know, having something. I hope there's nothing weird in my coffee and I don't start an out body experience. I thought you might have done. But what you're describing there is tranquility.
Right.
So that is an aspect.
I assumed it was a thing.
Yeah, it's a thing. It's deep meditation, tranquility. But you were talking about manifesting as well, which is quite...
But that scared the hell out of me. So I thought, all right, I'm not doing that again. And I stopped from that day and I only picked it up again a couple weeks later. So I listened to Matt's episode of meditation on Matt's podcast. You definitely go check that out. I'll post it in the description. And I was just fascinated by some of the science behind it, but the way you just broke it down, the thoughts part of it. We'll get into this as we go through, but I just wanted to bring you in because I want people to try and take meditation a bit more seriously, and I think it's a very powerful tool that we can use to not only improve our mental health and our psychology, but our physiology as well, which is a lot you spoke about. So kind of just go through that and see what we can pull out and how we can figure out how to get more people meditating. Yeah. So why don't we start with?
Yes.
Give us a bit of a background about yourself, how you found it and how you got into it.
Who is Matt Marnie? Who is Matt Marnie? Matt Marnie is currently drinking Nuclear Power Coffee and I've been in the fitness space nearly 20 years now. So I've managed gyms, I've run studios, I've worked on community staff, orthopedic clinics, I've done a few bits and pieces. I am currently, well, I've been in the UAE 2 years, in Dubai 2 years. I'm currently a freelance personal trainer and Pilates teacher. I've also been involved in the teacher training side of that about 10 years, so training stuff, which I love. And today I have my meditation hat on. I'm a meditation teacher as well. I've had a practice for about, personal practice, near on 10 years.
Oh, wow.
And it's interesting because people come to meditation for different reasons. That's my experience. But a big part of it is challenges with mental health. You talked about panic attacks and stress. And that was my routine. So, you know, just for listeners know, why did I get involved in this meditation lark? You know, my challenges with my mental health, bottom line. And we're not talking about, you know, what panic attacks were a part of it. And, you know, they weren't that pleasant. But, you know, late 20s, dark cloud. Depression, we know it has suffered from it. Scary as hell. Anyone who's suffered from depression, the world goes grey. Mm. You know, and I had these periods in my 20s, and as a bloke, I just, you know, I'd do the old bottom up approach, which is, you know, train, you know, change my neurology via my physiology. We're going to talk today about the top down approach, which is the meditation approach. But anyway, I'd kind of have these experiences. I had a few in my 20s. They were sporadic. They were a couple of years apart. And then in my early 30s, I'm now 45. I say that, I'm a 45-year-old man. But in my early 30s, I had my last kind of rock bottom, emotional rock bottom, call it what you will.
Okay.
And I finally bit the bullet and I started meditating. So I started meditating and I started with guided stuff. And we'll talk a little bit more about, you know, how people can get started. But to sum it up, and this sounds like a bit of a profound statement, but it's changed my life.
Like, I don't doubt that,
It's changed my life, night and day. And it is a superpower. It is something that a lot of people are interested in.
Yeah.
Huge amount of people are interested in. They want to know about it. Oh, tell you what, Craig, I reckon I should meditate. It's a bit like the posture thing. You know, when people talk about posture, oh, my posture's a bit naughty. Posture. Yeah. So people are aware of meditation. They think they should be doing it.
Right.
But there are misconceptions about what meditation is.
It's quite daunting to think about it, if you, what I would consider meditation to be, to think you'd have to have some sort of experience to be able to go and sit and be with your thoughts, or like, I've been doing it for 3 months and still got no idea what's going on. And I've listened to a lot of stuff around, so it is quite intimidating to be a complete novice, and then, not intimidating because it's scary, but intimidating is because I'm sat here doing nothing, or even just the act of putting the time aside to go and practice it and just to sit and breathe and be mindful is...
Yeah, so what happens, if you think of it this way, when you sit down to meditate, are you open-eyed or closed, eyes closed?
Closed.
Yeah, most people go closed. So when you close your eyes, you're closing off your, you know, the visual stimulus, which is your brain's main input, yeah? Okay. So we walk around the day, don't we, and we have stimulus coming in all the time, people we're talking to, lights, traffic, etc. When you close your eyes, you're left with your mind, okay? So here's the first misconception. We need to put this one to bed. People say it to me a lot. Matt, I can't meditate. I go, why is that? So because I can't clear my mind, right? Meditation, this is the first point to make to people. It's not about clearing your mind. Your mind does not, it doesn't do that. When you try and clear your mind, you struggle, yeah? It's not about clearing your mind, okay? It's about training your mind. It's about developing a relationship with your mind, which you spoke about there.
That makes sense.
Your listeners will probably identify with training their body physically.
Yeah.
So if you, in the modern world, we're more sedentary, we don't do a lot. If we don't train our body, what happens? It gets weak, it gets poor, it's not fit for purpose in the real world. We just apply the same rules to our mind. You know, if we don't train our mind turns on us.
Right.
That's what we've got. We've got a mental health crisis, mate. Now, we know it, don't we? Look at rates of suicide.
Yeah, it's
men,
crazy.
Men between the ages of 25 and 45, it's the biggest killer of men. So this stuff is real. It's going on. My wife's a school teacher, secondary schools. I've got nieces and nephews. We see it in our kids. We know it's there. We're not sure what to do, don't we? We blame it on social media.
Right.
We blame it on all this stuff. Yes, we're exposed to stuff. So before I start talking about, you know, how we meditate, what the benefits are, it's probably best to kind of, and I don't want to bore people with too much science, but just paint a picture about the mind and what it's about. So there's a couple of things that people need to be aware of. The first thing is that we have an inbuilt negativity bias.
Yeah.
From an evolutionary standpoint, it's there.
Don't worry about boring us with science. We love science.
Okay, we love science. Right, we'll go for it. So we've got a negativity bias. Mm. So this goes from an evolutionary standpoint. Let's say back in the day, right? Back in the day, we're in our cave, right? I stay at home one day. I help out with a gathering. Yeah. You go off and hunt. You come back. I'll be like, how are you, Craig? Yeah, it's all right, mate. Yeah. But be careful. I go, oh, what's that, mate? There was a naughty lion down there by the creek. It's a negative thing. I'll be like, oh, I'll pay attention to that because survival. That's what it's inbuilt for. It's served us. You know, you can imagine the paranoid people. They probably got to pass their genes on.
Yeah.
Don't eat that. It's naughty. So you can imagine.
I'll kill you.
I saw him kill. Yeah, he'll kill you. So we've got this inbuilt negativity bias. It's there. Yeah. So that's already working against us in the modern world because we've got less predators and less things to worry about. The other thing to think about is our mind's ability to mental time travel.
Okay.
So our minds are amazing. We've got the prefrontal cortex, which most animals don't have. And that's the reason we dominate this planet, and could be argued we're destroying this planet, but that's another conversation. So we have this prefrontal cortex. We have the ability to it's called chromesthesia. If your listeners want to know, chromesthesia, that's the ability to reflect on the past or project about the future.
Chromesthesia, yeah.
And again, quite useful from an evolutionary standpoint. You come and see me, you say there was a naughty lion down there, it almost tore my head off.
Yeah.
You don't forget that. You reflect on the past, quite a useful tool. I won't go down there again. Example, I don't know why I've got caveman on my mind, but it's this coffee. But, you know, there's a rival tribe over the hill, right? They're a bit naughty, Craig. Yeah, they're a bit violent, and they keep killing our members of our tribe. Right? So we're like, this ain't good. So we better prepare for the future. So it's quite nice to project, negatively, in a way. Tell you what, Craig, if we stay around here, they might wipe us all out. That's a possibility. Let's move, right? So these have uses. They've helped us procreate and become the Homo sapiens. Sapiens, I think we are classified as. So we're here on this planet. So we've got these things. Now, the problem arises in the modern day is that we've got this negativity bias and we've got this ability to mental time travel. We are now bombarded with information.
Yeah.
I'll throw it to you. Where does our information come from today?
Internet, social media.
24-hour news cycles.
Yeah.
Clickbait. So people say, why is it, you know, we've got clickbait? Why are we drawn to negative stuff on Facebook? We know it ourselves on social media. Someone puts something horrific on, we're all at it.
Yeah.
We're all reading it. We're drawn to this stuff. So we're already drawn to this stuff. So my mind's already working against us in the modern world. Okay, so we're drawn to negative stuff. And then we start projecting. Okay, so this is a problem. So people are thinking, okay, I think quite negatively. That's fine. I project a lot. Okay, I'll maybe meditate and sort that out. What people don't realize is that, yes, your mindset can change, your personality can be affected, but this can have a real impact on your physiology. So when I tell people, I tell groups that I teach that your thoughts can make you sick.
Yeah.
You get weird looks. What do you mean your thoughts can make me sick? I mean, you know, a best way to describe it would be, we'll talk about stress, because a lot of people come to meditation because they're stressed, they need to be calmed down, Matt. So I'll throw it over to you, Craig. I'll throw it over to you. So what goes on, if you can tell the listeners, what goes on when someone is stressed out? Call it the fight or flight response. What happens to people?
They spend more time in the sympathetic nervous system.
Ooh. Sympathetic nervous system. What happens in the sympathetic nervous system?
High stress.
High stress. Heart rate goes up, doesn't it? We get blood flow to the peripheral limbs. So we get, you know, vasal dilation in the arms and legs, vasal constriction. That's not good from a cardiovascular standpoint. Adrenaline and cortisol create inflammation. So there are all these issues that arise from being in that state.
Yeah.
Okay. But normally, back in the day, we would spot that lion, wouldn't we? We'd get the fight or flight response. We'd have a tear up, we'd kill the animal, we'd run. We'd metabolize these chemicals that have been produced as a response to stress. That's fine. We get back to camp, we sit down. Oh, almost got killed there, mate. Yeah, we got away. We have a meal and we go from sympathetic to parasympathetic.
Yeah.
Rest and digest. Modern world, we haven't actually got many predators about anymore. You know, driving on the 311, I'm new to Dubai. Oh, yeah. That can be a little bit of a fight or flight response, or even Shakeside Road at certain times. But in general, we don't have these natural stressors. Now, another takeaway for your listeners. The body, your mind and your body, does not know the difference between perceived and an actual stress.
That's a good one.
And that's a really important thing. And this ties in with thoughts. So I'll give one of your listeners an example. You're sitting in front of your computer, all right? You're on Facebook probably getting stressed because some friend of yours, you know, he's a friend. You went to school with him. You don't even like him, but you're still watching his stuff. He stressed you out, right?
Yeah.
You get a stress response because you've got the ump. The body doesn't know you've just looked at Mark's Facebook page. Then you get an email from the boss.
Yeah.
That says, Craig, that deadline, can I have that spreadsheet 10 minutes early, you've forgotten about that spreadsheet. You've been spending your whole afternoon on Instagram and Facebook.
Stressing you get about Mark.
Yeah, exactly. Getting the ump about him.
Yeah.
You're already stressed. You get more stress. So you get a fight or flight response. The same response that you would have got down by the river when you saw that lion. It's exactly the same physiological response. The brain doesn't know the difference. The problem with today, and we're talking about a physiological thing and how stress can make you ill, is you're sat at your computer, you're not metabolizing that cortisol and that adrenaline. And you're continually having these fight or flight responses because you're on your phone then. You know, COVID. My God, you only got to stick the news on. You know, it's just death. So many people have died today. So many people do it. We're all talking about it. I mean, it's so relevant today.
Yeah.
So your body doesn't know the difference between perceived and actual threat. And then you're sitting there, you're already stressed out. You're projecting about the future. My God, can I get back to the UK in the summer? That's our stress at the moment. Mm. Everyone's worried about that. What's going to go on? I'll give you an example. My example, talking to the missus. We don't want to do 10 days in a Heathrow airport quarantine. So we're going to go amber, right? So we'll go, where are we going to go? Wait for the government announcement. All this uncertainty, stress. Yeah. Uncertainty is the biggest producer of stress. We don't like things to be uncertain. Then we're talking about maybe we'll go to Greece. Then we've got to do a PCR. What happens if I have my PCR and it's positive? Then I can't. So anyway. The example I'm trying to make is that we can get this physiological response from thoughts alone.
Yeah.
Okay. Highly stressed environments. People understand this. So we've got this mind wandering that goes on. You could be sitting there, and I'm waffling a bit here. Sorry, mate. But you can be sitting there watching Netflix.
Yeah.
Right. You're involved in a TV show that you enjoy with your wife or your partner, and you're not present. You're sitting there worrying about work, projecting about the future, regretting something you did the weekend before. All these thoughts, this mental time travel that goes on, yeah, is causing a physiological stress response in the body.
Yeah.
Your thoughts are making you sick.
Yeah.
So this is why it's really important to get hold of that. And a lot of it's unconscious. You don't even know you're doing it. You're just caught in this narrative all day. Sitting in the car. I'll tell you, the listeners as well, I normally have the radio on, I listen to podcasts. Switch your radio off in the car or switch your podcast off and just drive along. And just see how you feel when you do it. You'll notice something and you'll go, oh, I don't like that. I want stimulation. I need something to occupy me. Because why? Because you're left with your thoughts. It's an interesting thing to do.
True.
Driving your car silent. So the point I'm trying to make is this is why we need to train our mind.
Okay.
We need to train our mind because we've got this mental time travel, which stresses, you know, not even thinking about something that's a threat causes the same response.
So then, like, I guess that's the problem. That's what anxiety is, right? That's you worrying about something that's potentially going to happen or could happen or that hasn't necessarily happened yet, but you're already having adverse physical responses to that.
Yeah, think about when someone has, and if anyone's had panic attacks, and I mean, I've had them, they're unpleasant, they're not rational, you've got no control over it. When I was having panic attacks many years ago, I was like even scared to go out of my house. It was ridiculous. I didn't want to go to work. There's no rhyme or reason. But it's like the straw that broke the camel's back.
Mm.
So there are views on mental health and depression and anxiety where it just says sometimes the nervous system just is just in that state of fight or flight so much it shuts stuff down.
Right.
It causes a panic attack to stop you moving, to stop you going places. So it's an inbuilt system. But it is. It's that stinking thinking. You know, it's a term I've picked up over the years, stinking thinking. These negative loops that we have. Now, structural changes in the brain. I know you're interested in this. So You've got your reptilian part of the brain, the limbic system that was created first. And you've got the amygdala. So when we get that fight or flight response, the amygdala will be triggered and that will start that cascade that will create those chemicals and that adrenaline, that cortisol to get ready to have a tear up or get on your toes and run. When we stay in sustained states of stress, the amygdala becomes more hypersensitive.
Okay.
Yeah, itself. There are some studies that show people's amygdala got bigger, but the amygdala becomes more hypersensitive. You become even more sensitive to negative information. The hippocampus, which is another area of your brain, which is responsible for rational thinking, for memory, cognition, that studies have shown that will actually shrink in size. So the hippocampus is almost like keeping an eye on the amygdala. When the amygdala kicks off, it goes, it's dangerous. The hippocampus goes, no, that's all right, mate.
Chill.
Okay. But he starts to get smaller.
Okay.
The amygdala gets bigger.
Right.
So this negativity bias is even increased.
And that's when you start leaning towards that more than...
Yeah, the stinking thinking. So you've got this perceived threat. You've got structural changes in the brain. So it's like this vicious cycle. And then you've got this... So I don't know if any of your listeners are familiar with Joe Dispenza's work.
Yeah.
So Joe Dispenza, You Are the Placebo, Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself. If you're not familiar with his stuff, really interesting stuff. He's a chiropractor, but he's heavily involved in neuroscience now. He talks about thoughts creating feelings and feelings creating thoughts.
Mm.
So we just touched on the whole, you have a thought, it creates a feeling in your body.
Mm.
Right? Fight or flight response.
Right.
Right. You get that adrenaline, you get that cortisol. So his research and his study has shown that the cells in your body become addicted almost to these chemicals. So the receptors, the cells in your body, they become accustomed to adrenaline, to cortisol.
Yeah.
All right. So in effect, you have a thought, creates a neurotransmitter, neuropeptide, triggers an organ to produce, or a gland to produce a hormone. So you get this cascade. So your body starts to become dependent, sounds odd, but almost becomes a junkie to these chemicals.
Mm.
So then the body starts to demand more of the same. People don't realize this. They demand more of the same. The body demands, so it's the body starts to become the subconscious mind. The body takes over. People don't realize this.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, it becomes, so you become dependent. So the body starts to command or demand these chemicals. So you know, you've got thoughts create feelings, feelings create thoughts. You've got this vicious cycle. And you've probably seen it with members of your family or people that you know. You know, you've always got that friend who's just negative.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You see it around England playing football now, right? You've always got that mate, right? It's just rubbish, they're rubbish, load of good, we're never going to win. But you've got those friends who are really quite negative. And as people get older, there's neurodegeneration that goes on in people's brains as we age. That can contribute to it. But people forget this whole thing of you just stuck in this cycle. You get more and more dependent. Cells get more and more dependent on these chemicals. So you just get... just become that miserable fucker. Apologies for my swearing there.
No, not at all.
Become that miserable fucker. So this is all going on.
So then I've been trying to call people on this lately and it's just been bugging me more and more and more when people have a very negative response to something. And it seems to be, I'm making a conscious effort to try and have positive or non-judgmental reactions to stuff. So if someone cuts in the traffic or does something stupid on the road, not trying to lose my shit and just be like, well, that guy's gone now, like, whatever. But then people who just absolutely lose their shit is they're just adding fuel to the fire of creating the more negative and having more of those responses.
Yeah, road rage is a classic example. Road rage is your classic example. There's a stimulus and there's a reaction.
Mm.
So this is one of the things that, and we'll get on to, you know, the benefits of meditation and what sitting there and just focusing on your breath does. But it's the difference between responding to a situation and reacting. They're different. Reacting to a situation is different to responding. Responding is almost like there's that pause.
Yeah.
That amygdala kicks in, limbic system, bang, I'm gone. So my advice to people is be kind with people who are just, it's you can't just fix this overnight. It's just an inbuilt, it's a program.
Yeah.
It's an inbuilt program. So the issue is for your, some of your listeners, you know, particularly in a CrossFit environment, you know, that's already quite a
stressful environment.
Stressful environment on the system.
Yeah.
So it's worth bearing in mind that, you know, if you've already got a type A personality, he's, you know, highly wired, highly reactive, highly stressful, when he comes to CrossFit, smash the life out of himself. Yeah. He's actually pouring more fuel on the fire, more stress hormones,
yep.
And it becomes a vicious cycle. And then as you guys know, from a performance aspect, when you are stressed, yeah, form goes out the window.
Yeah.
Stress causes muscle guarding around joints because the body thinks it's going into a fight or flight state. You're not going to get thoracic extension. Your whole body's going to tense up. And a lot of injuries are caused. People don't realize this. Yeah. Injuries and stress.
Yeah.
Nervous system shuts down range of motion. It's guarding. It thinks something bad's going to happen. You get this closed posture. So, yeah, absolutely. Stress, amygdala, stuff going on. Be kind to your friends is what I'd say. So if you've got that miserable friend who keeps reacting, it takes time. And there's stuff you can do.
Okay.
You know, this meditation isn't a cure for all. It's a tool.
Yeah.
There's things like counseling. There's things like gratitude lists and all this kind of. There's even laughter yoga. Yes, I did a podcast recently, laughter yoga. Yeah, very good. Yeah. So there's lots of stuff doing you can do to change our physiology. So a lot of people will fix the neurology via the physiology. So that's the bottom-up approach.
Got you.
And it works to a degree.
Okay.
But then, obviously, it's about balancing it and finding that top-down approach as well. The top-down approach.
And when you say works to a degree, is that just there's the limit on how far you can or how much you can heal with it and it stops being effective, or is it just it's your...
I think it's individual. Individual physiology. And, I mean, we all know if we're stressed out, go and exercise. And we sell the value of that. We know that. We work in the movement world. Endorphins get tossed around loosely, you know, and this feel-good serotonin. There's all this stuff that gets involved. But I think eventually it gets just, particularly if you're doing the wrong type of training.
Because that's the thing we get is a lot of people come and say, oh, this is my escape from work and family and this is my de-stressor. And then you're trying to say, well, I understand that, but you're actually coming in and adding stress to you and your body's not going to distinguish what type of stress this is. It's just going to build up.
Yeah, I mean, the normal physiological response to stress, exercise, for example. So exercise is it's a good stress. We talk about, you know, we talk about stressors. Chronic stress is the problem. And this is the stinking thinking. This is what chronic stress is. It's this constant drip feed. Exercise can act as an effective form of offsetting stress.
Yeah.
Okay? Because you experience the stressor. Then when you get home and you're chilling out, you go from sympathetic to parasympathetic.
Yeah.
Now, if someone's redlining that too much, so they're already highly stressed because of their thinking and their reactions and the chemicals and the feelings they have in their physiology, and then they go and smash the life out of themselves at CrossFit, they might feel a temporary release,
yeah.
But they're going to stay in that sympathetic state. And this is why exercise prescription and listening to your body and, you know, recovery and yoga and meditation all play a part, because fundamentally it's about we want HRV, don't we? We want good heart rate variability. We want the ability to experience a stressful situation in our life,
but be able to pull ourselves back out of it.
Yeah, get home from work and not like just carry on ranting and raving at your family.
Yeah,
you know, leave that at the door. You hear people talk about it, don't you? I get home, I leave that at the door. But we want the ability to do it. So our thoughts create feelings. Our feelings create thoughts. Exercise is a useful strategy. But it's limited if that top-down effect is all day, it's constant. You can only go in the gym for an hour. But if you're sat in front of your computer reacting and have no awareness around the thoughts, some people, until people meditate, they are oblivious to this thing called the mind.
Yeah.
And when they sit down and close their eyes, they go, Jesus Christ, I couldn't clear my mind. And then you go to them, it's not about clearing your mind. And that's where a meditation teacher like me comes in to guide them with compassion and empathy about, actually, let's develop a relationship with this thing called your mind, which is running riot all day and just reacting to stuff constantly.
Yeah, makes sense.
So there's a physical aspect to it. There's a physical aspect.
That makes a lot of sense. And I think that will... When I first heard you explain that and then clarified it a bit more, then that makes a lot more sense as to how stress builds up and becomes a problem and why it's important to be able to manage that. What would be entry point? So let's say we've been told or we've decided that we want to do something top down.
Yeah.
So where do we start?
You want to start meditating. So I think before we talk about how to approach it, because there are different forms of meditation, so how, where you should start, let's talk about, I'll give you a brief overview of what meditation might look like.
So yes, people can identify let's start
there. So you sit down on the floor. You don't have to sit on the floor cross-legged, by the way. I sit on a chair when I teach groups.
Yeah.
I haven't got adequate hip mobility and I can't stack my spine in that position. I sit on a chair. You have to sit on the floor cross-legged.
Because I started with that, too uncomfortable. Yep. So I got one of those, like, they're called an Indian puff. It's like a wicker thing you sit on.
Oh, you're proper, mate.
Still too Indian uncomfortable.
Yeah, sit on a chair.
So I'm sat on a bench now.
Sit on a bench. Yeah. Sit on a chair. I sit on a chair and I've been doing this years and I teach groups and they walk in people for groups, beginners groups, and they're like, where's your yoga? I'm not a yoga teacher. I'm a meditation teacher.
You're in a meditation class.
Yeah, I'm not here to, you know, show you how much external rotation I've got in my hips. I'm here to train the nut.
Yeah.
So sit on a chair, put a cushion behind you. So just take it a general overview. Close your eyes and the focus might be sensation of the air at the end of your nose.
Yeah.
Right? That's an anchor point that we use in meditation. So you're sitting there and you start to focus. You've closed your eyes, no more stimulus. You start to focus on the air in your nostril.
Right.
So you're sitting there very quickly. You'll be lost in thought.
Yeah.
Right? You're off. You're gone.
Yeah.
You're starting to think about it. Netflix show. Will England qualify out the group? What if they get Germany? What if they get Portugal? The missus. There's all this stuff.
Yeah.
Right? That is normal. So let your listeners listen to this. The mind will wander.
Yeah.
I don't care how long you've been meditating. The mind will wander. But what will happen is if you're in a class or you're in a beginner's group, is a teacher like me will go, and you may have noticed that your mind has wandered. I wouldn't use that voice. I use my normal voice, but quite often the voice is like that. So you will have noticed that your mind has wandered. If it has, that's cool.
Yeah.
Label what you're thinking about. Well, I'm thinking about work. And with a smile, I say people with a little smile, with your little cheeky bugger, there's the mind again. He's wandered. Bring him back to the breath.
Okay.
Right? That is it. That is meditation. People go, what do you want about? How can you be Zen-like doing that? What you're doing there is you're catching the mind. You're starting to train it, pulling it on the leash. The technical term, we've thrown out chromesthesia earlier.
Yeah.
Let's throw out a bit of equanimity.
Equanimity.
Equanimity. So this is what you'll hear a lot of meditation teachers talk about. Equanimity means recognizing thoughts as thoughts.
I like that.
That is a skill. Meditation is a skill. It's called meditation practice for a reason. You don't walk in your CrossFit gym, like you say, we talked about earlier on your podcast when I was interviewing you about fundamentals. You don't walk in and go, right, I'm having some of that snatch business.
Let's go.
No, you do the fundamentals, meditation. You're going to sit down and you're going to start with 5 minutes. Literally, you're going to sit down with 5 minutes. And you're just going to sit down and you're going to focus on the breath on your nose. And your mind's going to wander and you're going to catch it and you're going to come back. And that is a skill that you develop. Think of it every time you catch your mind wandering. And look, I meditate this morning, I meditate most days. Sometimes I sit down, I'll do 20 minutes and then I'll do a gratitude practice for 10 at the end. We won't talk about gratitude. That's valuable practice to have. But some days I open my eyes and I think, it was a waste of time. I just spent most of the time, just the mind was busy. But that's okay.
Because you're still training the mind.
That's okay, yeah. I noticed that my mind was busy. And this is another skill. Another thing that I've got from meditation is reflective practice, which a lot of people don't realize, is that it's an opportunity to sit down. When you become a little bit more, when you can actually just, you can overcome the signals of the body.
Okay.
You know, we talked about the body being a subconscious mind and being in charge and dictating stuff. The body wants stimulus.
Yeah.
Okay. But, you know, they're like, oh my God, I want to watch Fox News or whatever it is. I want to get stimulated. So the body will tell you, will lie to you, will say things like, when I first started, this is boring. I want to look at your phone.
Mine's, so I put a timer on.
Yeah.
And that's more to force me to stay longer. And I'm I bet that's at least 3 minutes now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, no, exactly. So it will do. It will start. But you'll start with 5 minutes. You'll get used to, every time you catch your mind wandering, oh, there you are, you cheeky bugger.
Yeah.
Brought you back. I've noticed you're doing that now. Bringing back equanimity. Every time you catch your mind, it's like a bicep curl in the gym.
Got you.
You are training that skill of being able to recognize thoughts as thoughts. Here's where it might come in useful. You think, how's that going to be applicable in my everyday life? You're sitting there. I don't know. Let's say, for example, you've just had an uncomfortable meeting with your boss.
Right.
Right. Your boss has just, you know, torn you to shreds, walked out, not happy with what you're doing or the team, the performance. You could get in your car and you could just ruminate. And that's the technical word I went, rumination. You could be worrying about, project. You've lost your job. Then your family's got to move back to the UK. You're homeless. It's projecting.
Yeah.
Thinking about what he said, making stories up. It's all fight or flight, fight or flight, fight or flight. Or every time you, you know, and you become more skilled at it. You become more rational. You know, you catch that thought.
Yes.
Oh my God, I'm protecting. Like, this is, that's ridiculous.
Right.
Like, I'm thinking about losing my job. That's ridiculous. And you, this is the relationship you start to develop with your mind. This is when you talk about training your mind. So equanimity is definitely a skill that you want to develop.
Nice.
Recognize thoughts as thoughts. Don't get lost in that thread that goes on for, well, just, you're just lost in it. Right. Constant fight or flight, fight or flight. Does that make sense?
So, yeah, perfect yeah. sense. So it makes it way less intimidating to get into it of like, ah, because that's exactly, you just explained what my meditation practice looks like in the morning is breathe, breathe, breathe. What have you got to do today?
Mm.
Then all you're doing at that point is, oh no, you've thought about something, go back to breathe, breathe, breathe.
Exactly, exactly. And you can do stuff, so we were talking about people being highly stressed.
Yeah.
And you know, and the body demanding those certain chemicals. There are things you can do. So you can use breath work. I know you had Rose on the podcast. So for me, quite often I will use some breath. I manipulate the breath work to manipulate my nervous system. So a longer exhalation will facilitate a parasympathetic state.
Yeah.
So you take a breath in for a count of three, you breathe out for a count of six.
Yep.
That might be a pattern that you follow. I might do that for a few rounds before just to settle me. Another strategy people could use if they find that their mind is really, really busy is some gentle movement before.
Okay.
Not smash the life out of yourself.
Burpees down the time.
Yeah, exactly. Because you're going to be in a really highly stressed state. Just some gentle movement can really, and it can also help people get more comfortable in their bodies. Quite often people will sit, when they do longer sits, their body communicates with them, not from like, I want chemicals, but just like, this isn't very comfortable.
Okay.
So some mindful movement before can really help. So nice. That can be useful. So you develop that skill of equanimity. The breath work can be used, and breath work is separate, so I should talk about this now. So you said earlier that the meditation can be intimidating, it can be, because there's different types. There's fluffy language, right? Fluffy language. I'm not up for that fluffy language. It's just, but there are different types. So you've got...
I'm going to come to one of your meditation sessions. I can imagine it being quite enjoyable to your accent to be, rather than the stuff I've been listening to on YouTube.
Yeah, horses for courses.
Yeah.
Yeah, get a boy from South London to deliver your meditation course. I'll come down here and I'll do a beginner's course for your base three people. If they want to learn about meditation, they'll come down. So... you sit down there, we're talking about a breath work to create more of a vagal tone. Yes, that's what meditation. So we've got mindfulness.
Right.
That's kind of hijacked meditation. So when people think of meditation, that term mindfulness is used a lot. Yeah, I'm going to do some mindfulness. Like, okay, right. Mindfulness is a form of meditation.
Yeah.
So that is one form. Concentration-based practice is another.
Okay.
Breath work is completely separate.
Yep.
So they do overlap. There are things like there's mantra based, there's loving kindness. This is more the airy fairy. The guys don't like the loving kindness. I have to say there is lots of value in all of them.
Yeah.
But if I was saying to someone, where do you start? I would start with maybe some breath work if they want to just settle themselves into the chair. Even some, breathing in and out of alternate nostrils. That kind of stuff works. Concentration based is literally counting. Is a really useful tool to use for concentration-based practice.
Yeah.
Example, as you breathe in, so you start from a random number, something like 32, right? I just randomly pick a number. As I inhale, 32. As I exhale, 32. As I inhale, 31. As I exhale, 31. You have to stay present. If you just did 31, 30, 29, it's so pre-programmed that way of counting that your mind can wander and you can count at the same time.
Yeah.
But what I've found is forcing the 31, 31, 30, 30, inhale, exhale, you have to stay present. So concentration-based, and in particular counting, can be a really useful way if, for example, you've had a mega busy day.
Okay.
You just have one of those days, one of those periods in life. Just lots of stuff going on. You sit down, no chance. Mind is too busy. And from a survival standpoint, the mind is sometimes hijacked because you're like, look, I've got to sort this stuff out.
Yeah.
You know. So you can sit down in your chair and you can do some concentration-based stuff. And I would encourage people to do it. So it can be counting. It can be focusing straightforward. It can be focusing on the air at the end of your nostril.
Try that one.
And that's a tough one.
Yeah.
Just to stay there, how long does it take before my mind wanders?
Not long.
Come back.
Yeah.
Mind wanders. You could focus on particular sensations in the body. You know, an area you can do body scans.
Yep.
Body scans are quite a nice concentration based because you are focused on a particular area. It overlaps with mindfulness, but let's keep it basic. Concentration, you do body scans. Mindfulness is a little bit more open. So with mindfulness, you could think of something like, I might have a group sit there and say, okay, I want you to become aware of sounds in the building, for example. So you'd have sounds in the building.
I was sat at home the other morning and one of the YouTube videos is like, pay attention to sounds in the building. I was just like, oh, it's home. It's not really loud. I can't really hear anything. There was like AC, like noise, something else was going, and the cat started crunching on cat biscuits. And I was like, timing of that.
It is, honestly, when you do this stuff, it surprises me exactly that. We're so oblivious to stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, pay attention to sounds in the room, and then it might take you outside the room.
Okay.
It can be sensations in the body.
Yeah.
So I remember, now you're talking about these stories. I got creative with my practice a few years back. So I'd sit there and I'd be like, just make stuff up. So I'm sitting there, I've done my breath work. I've done a bit of focus on movement of air in the rib cage, done that. And I still do it now. And this is mindfulness. I'll imagine, right? People at home are thinking, you weirdo. But I imagine my body is like a blank, like slate.
Okay.
Right? Absolutely blank slate. And I wait for my body to communicate with me, right? I kid you not, it is outrageous. Like, I have no idea where the sensation's coming from, right? So So I'm just open. I've got to be open. I've got to be present to my body. And I'll feel just an ache in my knee. Then quite an intense scratching thing down on my ankle. Then this massive thing in the back. That again is open awareness. So that's mindfulness, right?
Wow.
So anyway, your listeners, they've never meditated. I ain't doing that. Start with concentration-based. But there are layers to this stuff. But fundamentally, it's about, and I think Jon Kabat-Zinn is quoted saying this, it's about paying attention on purpose in the present moment, non-judgmentally. And that's the thing. It's about when you do catch your mind wandering, bit of compassion.
Yeah.
You know, like my mind's wandered. It was doing it anyway.
Yeah.
I've caught the little bugger now. Bring him back. Now, your listeners are probably thinking, so what benefits can I see in everyday life?
That was my next question.
Yeah, so you're obviously going to develop a bit more equanimity, which is useful.
Yeah.
So I'm not getting lost in thoughts. My physiology will thank me. There's also what we call the default mode network, which is like an area of your brain, a few areas of your brain. It's a theory that communicate, and this is daydreaming.
Okay.
So it's all to do with daydreaming, and it's an important aspect of neurology, and you need to go into this default mode network. It's why people struggle a lot, actually. It's why phones are a nightmare, because people are not giving themselves time just to sync parts of their memories and thoughts together, because you know what it's like. You're in a restaurant, Mrs. goes to the toilet, the phone's out. I ain't sitting here on my own just doing nothing. So we're missing that default mode network. But what can happen there, though, is that's the rumination aspect, where people can daydream and wander negatively. What mindfulness does is it switches you into task positive network.
Okay.
Because you are on task, you are focusing on something. You cannot be in the task positive network and the default mode network. So this is going to benefit people at work. I can't focus on one task. I multitask. Now, multitasking don't work. I've picked my phone up all the time. So this is going to overlap, and people are going to start to find that they have better focus at work.
Yep.
Because of that task positive network. If you can focus on your breath for 20 minutes, catch your mind a few times, you're going to be able to listen to your wife when she's telling you about her day. That's quite useful. Or husband walks in. You know what it's like? I've noticed over the years, I'm better at being present with my wife.
Yeah.
And it's not our fault. We're drawn by so many different things.
But that would be so useful for every situation. That's a great example, obviously, of your significant other. But being able to concentrate better and be more present, you get so much more out of life than just cruising through without being distracted all the time.
Yeah, and it's that age-old thing. Everyone's been guilty of this. You're in a conversation with someone. We probably do it on this podcast a lot because we've got questions to ask.
Yeah.
But you're in this and you're not even listening to what the person's saying. You're just waiting to come back with your response.
You think about the next question.
Yeah, just being present. People pick up on that energy.
Yeah.
And this is just an offset. Just sitting there and focusing on your breath. You know, these are skills that it's just a byproduct of being more in the task positive network. Other stuff you've got going on. Structural stuff in the brain. So we spoke earlier about the amygdala becoming more heightened, the hippocampus actually shrinking in size.
Yeah.
Regular meditators, and we're not talking a huge amount of time, we're talking 20 minutes a day for not a huge amount of time, they notice structural changes in the brain. So the hippocampus, you become the more neurons, more gray matter in the hippocampus, the amygdala becomes some studies, there's really serious meditators, basically a shrinkage, but it becomes less reactive.
Okay.
So that goes back to that thing of just, you didn't do any, you know, counseling, you just sat down and focused on your breath.
Yeah.
And as a result, hippocampus increases in size, amygdala is less sensitive. You are less reactive to stuff.
Yeah.
That road rage that we talked about, reacting and responding. The hippocampus is more is responsible for memory, cognition. You get brighter. And then that sounds going to sound airy-fairy, but you do. I've noticed it in my practice.
That makes
my memory. You know, we get told, I'm 45 now, I get told, my pals who I go to school with, they're all they talk about is how big their gut is, how much weight, and life's over. That's it. It's all downhill. No, it ain't. So the neuroplastic changes of meditation are proven. So you want better focus, you want better concentration, you want to be more focused at work, you want a better relationship with your wife. Just do some meditation. Doesn't have to be complicated. And I share my wife's experience. So my wife has been meditating regularly for the last year. She just got bored of me, pretty much. Seriously, I'm not even joking. Like, when, you know, when we got locked down harsh in, like, at the beginning of lockdown here in Dubai, you know, we weren't allowed out of the house about past proper lockdown. So during that period, she was teaching online, so she was busy. And I had, my work went. I had a couple of online things I was doing. So my routine was gone, but I was just like, I was getting up in the morning, meditating, doing great. I was like, just a bit of training. I was floating around. She's like, how can you float around? You've got no work. It was like, I just hammered the meditation, big stuff. So she obviously saw that. She got bored of me telling her about it. So
got stuck in herself.
She got stuck in. It's had a profound impact on her. And it's very subtle the way this stuff works. It's not like a bolt of lightning. It's just stuff that you notice in time. I'll give you an example. So I was living in Milton Keynes. I'd met my wife. She was in North London. We met on a meditation and yoga retreat, interestingly enough. I wasn't on the retreat. We met on this retreat, and she was in North London. I was in Milton Keynes. I was traveling up and down to see her, and in the end, make the jump. Sold my house, left my job at the clinic I was working in. It's a big jump. I've been there 12 years. It was kind of all my freelance work was based around Milton Keynes. I sold my house. I got in the car, drove down to North London to be with the wife, right? Massive commitment.
Yeah.
I wasn't married to her at this time. And you're talking to someone who's got massive commitment issues. Do you know what I mean? So it's a big step.
Yeah.
So in preparation for this life-changing experience, I doubled down hard on my meditation, mate. I'm not even joking. I was like, I was in that chair every day hammering it.
Nice.
No, I wasn't hammering it. That's the wrong term. I wasn't forcing it. I was sitting down.
Enjoying it.
Paying attention to the present moment on purpose, non-judgmentally, as Jon Kabat-Zinn. I just butchered that quote. But anyway. But so I said it. And do you know what, mate? And it's like hindsight stuff with this game. I sold my house. I quit my job. I moved down. I got work down in North London. I knew nobody. I'm a South Londoner. I'm across the river, mate. I went north of the river. I was there. I started up. I had a successful freelance business running. 6 months later, I looked back and went, Jesus, I breezed through that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And my wife has faced the whole COVID here
in
UAE teaching, mate. Masks on all day.
Yeah.
Hardcore when they've been at school. Like, and although they're stressed out, I've noticed it, and I noticed it with some of her colleagues. She's coping okay with it.
Nice.
It's okay that we're stressed. So this stuff really, it sounds a bit, but it does. It just helps you deal with life better.
Yeah.
And once you, it's like anything, once you've been coming to the gym for long enough and you see that this formula works, your life is better for going to the gym 4 or 5 times a week, being mindful around your food. Once you experience it, it's like, wow, this tool works. People give up too soon, mate. They give up too soon. They have these misconceptions. You know, they think it's hard. It's not hard.
Yep.
Well, that's a lie. At first, it can be challenging because you're exposed to how much your body and how much your mind wants stimulus.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's learning to focus on boring stuff. HRV improvements.
Okay.
So your CrossFitter guys, your guys that are training here, they want to recover from sessions better.
Yep.
Yeah? So how do they do that? Do some meditation. Take yourself into a parasympathetic state. Yeah? Try meditating. Go and train and then meditate afterwards.
I was going to ask about timers for that.
Yeah, meditate afterwards. Be mindful during your workout.
Mm.
This is the other thing. So do you know a guy called Ben Pakulski?
No.
Big bodybuilder. He's in the bodybuilding world.
Ben
Pakulski, amazing. And he is bang into his meditation, as done for years. You can be mindful when you exercise.
Right.
Just bringing yourself to the present moment. You know, informal practices. So I say to people, you know, if you want to just do some informal practices, and it's an interesting one to try, I've been trying it myself recently, become mindful when I'm brushing my teeth.
Uh-huh.
Right? So as I'm brushing my teeth, I'm gonna actually, and it sounds ridiculous, it's just stupid, focus on the sensation of that brush in my mouth. And every time I think about something, bring myself back to that. Showering is another informal practice, and it's difficult. I find this more difficult than a formal practice. Formal practice, my body knows. Sat down on the chair, pillar behind, stopwatch, curtains closed, press the button, start with the breath.
Yeah.
That's a pattern.
Yeah.
Getting in the shower, we mindlessly shower. Think about the stimulation that's going on in the shower. You are naked and you've got all these thousands of droplets. You're massaging your scalp. You're rubbing your face. You're rubbing. There's sensory overload. We are oblivious to it because we are lost in thought.
Would that be formal versus informal?
That's an informal method you do. I mean, it could become a formal thing, but your missus might get the ump. Why have you been in the shower 20 minutes? What are you up to in there? Could get yourself in trouble. So you start as an informal practice, but go in the shower and just try it. These are and just see how challenging it is. Not saying you've got to continue doing it, but what people need to grasp is that we don't have a relationship with our mind, and it's only when we bring our awareness or we try to take our mind to focus on something very mundane that we realize how challenging it is. I said at the beginning of the podcast, lots of people are interested in meditation. Mm. Lots of people have an idea that will benefit them. But like gym stuff, they might start, but they don't continue. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So something you said earlier, which was I thought was a very good point, is like you did a 20-minute meditation and that was a waste of time. I didn't get anything out of it. It's the same with training. Mm. And a lot of the guys listening are obsessed with training. The majority of our listenership is members from the gym. So they're all into their training. Is not being able to do it at the start is just like starting at the gym. So expecting it to be difficult and a process to get good at it. Is there I'm sure everybody's different and obviously it's different horses, different courses, but is there a best time to do it? Best duration to
really,
do it.
Really good question. No, the answer is no.
Okay.
The answer is, so I meditate first thing in the morning. I fall asleep in the afternoon.
Okay.
And evenings, I've just noticed it. So I first thing in the morning for me, my wife, no, not a morning person. She don't train in the morning. She trains in the afternoon.
Okay.
Meditates in the afternoon. Try to find if you can do a beginner's course, it is nice. It's nice to do something as a group and learn a little bit about it. But if not, just pick a time. It's called committed action.
Yeah.
You know, it's like anything. Find a time and commit yourself to it. Don't start with a huge amount. And you don't have to start with, most people start with guided.
Yeah.
You know, guided meditation, there's loads out there. Mm. You know, Calm's a massive app now. Insight Time is pretty good. You've got Mark Williams.
I started
with Headspace. Yeah, Mark Williams stuff on Spotify.
Okay.
He's quite a good one. I started with him. He wrote the MBCR, the Mindfulness-Based Cognitive Stress Reduction course, MBSR course in Bangor. He actually wrote it. Mark Williams has just got some very basic breath-based. His voice is a bit weird, so that might annoy people. But that's the other thing to be aware of as well, is when you go on these apps, I've listened to a few. When I was doing my teacher training, I was listening to these apps. And, you know, it is a bit stereotypical sometimes, and it puts people off.
Yeah.
You know, meditation teachers, there's people like me, just normal people who love training,
yeah,
love a beasting,
yeah,
loves deadlifting. You know, it's we meditate as well. Ben Pakowski, if you want to know about meditation. Yeah. But if they're going to start with an app, and you've got mantra, so if you want to listen to a mantra-based meditation, it might put you off for life.
Yeah.
It's like walking to a CrossFit gym and not doing the fundamentals. You get put off because you toss a bar above your head and tear your rotator cuff.
Yeah.
So concentration-based is probably a good start for most people.
Okay.
Where it's very, very concentrating on the breath in the nostrils.
Yeah.
Concentrating on and there's guided stuff. Pick a time a day, commit to it, and give it time. You know, you really do have to give it time. And it's like it's the halo effect.
Okay.
You know, like, have you heard of the halo effect? So you do something like go start training, you start eating better.
Yeah.
You're in a better mood, you have better relationships. The conscious act of sitting down to meditate, I firmly believe, just the conscious act of doing it, is almost telling your subconscious mind that I want to be less reactive.
Yeah.
I want to be calmer. So the impact of meditation, it's interesting. I've noticed so much in my life that I couldn't really talk to people about because I just think I'm a weirdo. So where's the evidence for that? But I've experienced masses of change. I'm conscious of time, but I've got a gratitude practice. Some people, we were talking about the negativity bias.
Yeah.
And how can I overcome it? I sit there and meditate and all I think is about is that fella Mark on Facebook who I want to punch in the face. Right? How am I going to help that? How can you change that those chemicals and feelings because you're caught in this loop? Gratitude practices are massive. So I spent years writing as a group of guys. I know guys, we don't do enough stuff for this, but guys I met on my journey, on my spiritual journey, we would get to the end of our day and I would list, I had a big A4 pad, I drew a line down the middle and I'd write things I was grateful for in the day, right? And it's the practicing that attitude of gratitude. I write 5 or 6 things down in the day, then a general list. I take that list, I do a voice note, WhatsApp, I'd verbalize it. There's so much evidence writing down a gratitude list is taking it out of the nut, putting it on paper, reinforce it by verbalizing it to someone. Okay. Do that daily. That starts to change that, just that conscious act. It's like thoughts create feelings, feelings create thoughts. If I am having thoughts, I have to think about things I'm grateful for, consciously think about them. If I think about them, I get a feeling. I get a feeling, it's a feedback loop.
Yeah.
Part of my meditation now is the 20-minute mindfulness, whatever I do, concentration-based, the alarm goes off 9 minutes actually. I don't know why iPhone have got this weird thing where you can only do 9-minute snooze. Perhaps you can change it. Maybe someone who's tech savvy can let us know. But anyway, I press the button and I do 9 minutes of thinking about things I'm grateful for. Don't just think about them, I embody them.
Okay.
Sometimes I feel like, if you remember the Ready Breck man, probably a bit too young, but you know, he's glowing. Yeah. Sometimes I'm sitting in my chair, Matt, I kid you not, I'm fucking glowing like the Ready Breck man. I'm like out, full of fucking gratitude, way. Seriously, sometimes not so, but gratitude practices are really good. Compassion-based practices. If you Google happiest man in the world, right, you put that in Google, Matthew Ricard pops up, this Frenchman, he's a Buddhist monk, happiest man in the world. They stuck a load of Buddhist monks in these fMRIs, MRI scanners on their brains. They got them to do their compassion-based practice, and the left prefrontal cortex on these, especially Matthew Ricard, lit up, and that is the area of your brain that is associated with gratitude and happiness. So
interesting.
Compassion-based practices and gratitude practices, they do have an impact on your neurology, which have an effect on your physiology. Your physiology then affects your neurology. You're a happier chappy. Do you know what I mean? You're brighter. You like the world. And then you can bore people at dinner parties by telling them, guess what? I meditate. Do you know what I mean? But it has. It has definitely, I would say to guests, I don't want to ramble on too long, but physical benefits. We talked about blood pressure and all that. You get that as well.
Do a bit
of meditation. Blood pressure comes down. I won't bore you with that. Immune function goes up. Sleep improves.
Yep.
All the stuff that we bang on about for training.
Yep.
And all for what? For sitting down on a chair, closing your eyes and staying with it and focusing on your breath for 5 minutes. Then became 10. Then became 20. Before you know it, you've got a meditation practice. Happy days.
That is a perfect spot to end the
show. It probably is, isn't it? I've just sold meditation.
I'm going to go meditate right now. That was excellent. All right. I would definitely want to set up a session in here. That sounds like
the Bay Street people, yes. Matt Marnie will get down. When I get back in the summer, we'll do their 4-week courses.
Okay.
4-week beginner courses, bit of neuroscience, bit of practice, bit of chat, which is, I think for the group stuff is useful because it's nice to sit around people and just talk about this stuff. Do you know what I mean? And I share my experiences and have that sense of community and support when they do it. What else do I do? This is my chance to flog myself, isn't it?
Go, yeah, please.
If you want a bit of personal training or you've got issues.
Sell yourself.
Yeah, Pilates, back pain. I do face-to-face stuff in Dubai. I do online stuff. In the September, there will be corporate well-being as well. So I'll be launching that. So I'll be going into companies, doing kind of the whole physical aspect, whole mental aspect. I'll still be meditating, hopefully, and I'll still be a happy chappy.
I'm sure you will be. Matt, thank you very much. That was awesome.
Pleasure.